nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Know the source indeed. Yeah. Well, good morning. It is August. No, it isn't. It's October. Lost a couple months there. It's October 9, 2019. And this is OneRadioNetwork.com. Patrick Timpone. Tomorrow, Dr. Fit, interesting fellow. He surrendered his medical license some time ago. So we know that he's on to something. We'll get his story tomorrow. And also, Mark Marcuna. It's a young fellow who's really into light and some cool things and the sunlight and all the benefits of lights. And he's also just a young kid, so we thought it would be fun to... He's probably the youngest person we've ever interviewed. I think he's 20. And so we thought, well, this would be good to kind of get a feeling of how that... how an enlightened, so-called, you know, allegedly enlightened millennial is making it through planet Earth in 2019. So we'll do that tomorrow, then open phone Friday. If you'd like to be on the show this morning, it is 888. You can do the telephone thing. I know it doesn't involve your thumbs, but, you know, you figure it out. 888-663-6386. And the email... Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. Our guest this morning for a little Wild and Woolly Wednesday, where we have hair-raising subjects, kind of reach out into the netherworlds on Wednesdays sometimes, along with money things, is a gentleman that certainly does that. He is not one of your kind of, well, let me just tell you a little bit about him. Preston Dennett, he started investigating UFOs and the paranormal in 86, wow, when he discovered that his family and friends and co-workers and other folks that he knew were having some unexplained encounters, like Close Encounters. Close Encounters, that's a great movie. Since then, he has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated all kinds of paranormal phenomena. He is an investigator for the Mutual UFO Network, a ghost hunter, wow, and paranormal researcher. 24 books he's written. Can you imagine? 100 articles. And he's spent some time with one of my heroes over the years was Art Bell, Coast to Coast, and also George Knapp, I think George, they're still doing on Coast to Coast. And he's been presented in all kinds of different publications. So he's been around the bend for a while with all of this work. And wow, his books, so it's like, come on. Unbelievable. His latest one is Schoolyard UFO Encounters. Before that, the Healing Power of UFOs, Not From Here, Volume 3, Undersea UFO Bases, UFOs Over Colorado, Inside UFOs. Mr. Preston, boy, you like UFOs, man. I said, holy cow. Were you a UFO kid, like when you were a little kid, too? Did you think about them?
No, I sure didn't. Not even for a second, really.
Did you really? You didn't, huh?
Nope, didn't believe in them. Yeah. I was a complete skeptic.
Really? And when were you born? How old are you?
Born in 65, so right now I'm 54.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And so somewhere along the line, you start running into people, new people that were having different experiences with other than earthly people?
Yeah. Turned out, you know, a bunch of people I knew were having experiences and didn't tell me. Probably a wise decision at that point, because I would have told them that they were liars or misperceiving or on drugs or just flat out crazy. Because I didn't believe in this subject. I just couldn't fathom it. I was pretty scientifically minded. I assumed that the stars were just too far away, period, and I don't want to hear it. But I was a pretty young man, 1986, heard a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, here we go again. This pilot is clearly nuts. I mean, he's got to be on drugs. He must have seen a reflection off the ice cap. He saw this object over Alaska. But it interested me. You know, the news, it was just a little segment on the news, maybe 30 seconds, a minute. And they just kind of joked about it, laughed nervously, and moved on. I thought to myself, well, this pilot just destroyed his career. What is he doing? And started talking about it. Huge mistake. Found out my brother had seen a UFO. My sister-in-law, a friend had missing time. Another friend had a close-up sighting. Brought it up at work. There was at least three people there that I'd worked with for years who had seen stuff, and another had missing time. So this was hitting me, you know, hitting home, certainly.
Right.
But not good news. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, Marco, you saw it. My brother, what did you see? And he says, well, I was driving along Reseda Boulevard with my two friends, and there was this craft. It was a saucer. Hmm. It had little lights on it, a Ooh. Dome.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah.
Wow, he saw it. And so when, I guess when your brother talks to you like that, you just kind of say, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something's going on here. Yeah.
I'm like, all right, you were with witnesses, huh? Well, let me talk to them. So I called up Phil and Greg, who, you know, were with his friends, who were with him when he saw this. I'm like, oh yeah, we saw it too. We chased it. We chased it down the road. Other cars were chasing it. I'm like, what is going on? And what I found is every person I knew who had seen a UFO had other witnesses with them. So I called all the other witnesses. Not that I didn't believe, you know, my family and friends.
Sure.
But I just couldn't wrap my mind around this. The world was being invaded by aliens, and very few people were talking about it.
And this, so this was back in the mid-80s or so.
Yeah, 1986, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 87, 88. I kind of, you know, it was difficult for me to accept this, so I sort of moved into it a little bit slowly at first.
Hey, before we go on, have you thought about the idea for yourself, Preston, of why... I mean, I don't believe in coincidences. I don't know about you. So why all these people in your life had all these different experiences?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't make that up, right? So I would, you know, what do you think that means for you?
Right. It was my number one question at first. I thought, well, what I is live this? In California. Mm-hmm. Could that be a factor?
Well, of course. What
is going on here? You know, I don't have anything in my past to point towards this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, why is this hitting me? So why am I even obsessed with it? Why do I even care?
Mm-hmm.
I had no answers. It just, I don't know. I felt a little bit scandalized. I'm like, well, why didn't you guys tell me? If this is really happening, you should have let me know. They're like, well, you wouldn't have believed me. And I have to say that they were right. You know, I wouldn't have. I don't know. I mean, it definitely hit me real hard and was a big adjustment.
So you think it was like your fate or your karma or your choice before you came in here to do this? And it has to be. I mean, there's no accidents, right? Why would you incarnate with all these people that had all these experiences?
Right? It's definitely unusual. I don't know. I was
definitely,
you know,
unusual.
In college at the time, and was studying science. I was really into science, and I kind of was thinking about being a science fiction writer.
Oh, good. See, good for you.
You know, I was aware of the idea of aliens.
Yeah, this was creeping in, wasn't it? It was creeping in.
But fictional aliens. Yeah. So when this sort of rolled into my life, I was a little bit prepared, I guess, mm-hmm. in a tiny, tiny bit of a way, because I had a lot of interest in astronomy,
sure,
and science and philosophy and anthropology and all this stuff,
sure,
which helped for sure. But boy, it fairly softened the blow.
Preston Dennett is with us. Began investigating UFOs about in the mid '80s or so. So Then walk us through then what was your process? Say, where did you go from there? I mean, how, I mean, the right. next that next step had to be something, a curious journey.
Yeah, well, what I did is like, all right, these guys must be mistaken. You know, I believe them. They're clearly sincere. I'm shooken up. I'm going to go to the library and find out, you know, that this is really swamp gas, because that's what I've heard. And I went to the library, and there weren't a lot of books back then, but there were enough. And what I found was that this subject had been taken seriously for decades. There was mountains of evidence. It was occurring across the world. There was an active cover-up, and it was real. There were very few books that, you know, tried to disprove this, and I checked them out, and they did not do a good job. It was not convincing at all. So the evidence was there, but it was just real hard for me to accept. And I read this quote from J. Allen Hynek, as you may know, is the father of modern ufology, associated with Project Blue Book. He was the astronomical consultant and actually defected from Blue Book at one point and went on his own and said this is a real phenomena. And I read a quote from him that said 1 in 40 people have had an onboard experience. And I'm like, well, no, there's just no way. That's way too many. That would mean I know somebody who's been abducted by aliens.
Excuse me, on board, meaning, come on, that can't be true.
Exactly.
1 in 40? No, come on. 1 in 40 people have actually gone on board, like going on a TWA plane and saying, welcome, you know, welcome to my craft.
Right. Oh. I thought, far, far too many. That would mean there's millions. That would mean I know someone.
Right. What's 1 in 40, right? Yeah.
And so I did. I started asking everybody I knew. I was not shy about it. Asked everyone in my family, all my friends, all my coworkers, and got a good 10 accounts, at least, of people who've either had face-to-face contact or missing time or just a full-blown onboard experience. So I thought, well, okay, maybe it is a little more common than I thought. And I started, I bought all the books I could. I joined every UFO group.
Oh, did you?
I started, I subscribed to the magazines, started interviewing people formally, recording their interviews and following up. And, I started going out at night into the field looking for this stuff. And I eventually did have my own sightings. Found out this is absolutely a real phenomena. After surveying the literature, all the other major researchers, I wrote an article for the Mutual UFO Network, their journal, the MUFON journal, saying, 1 in 40 people may have been abducted. And this is why. It was about 1 year later that the Roper poll came out. The Roper poll does all kinds of surveys.
Right.
And they did one on the UFO subject. And they found that 1 in 50 people show all the markers of having had an onboard experience.
And what are the markers?
A very close-up UFO sighting, missing time, unexplained scars on your body, dreams about being taken on board or seeing aliens, seeing little balls of light in your home, things like this. So, I found out, this is not only real, it's a lot more common than probably people even within the UFO community realize.
You would think, I don't know, do most people, when they have some kind of especially like an onboard thing, I mean, go to the police or, I don't know, just go to the FBI or some CIA or somebody and say, dude, this just happened here and I'm freaking out. I mean,
right.
Do they go?
No. I found, and this is a question I always ask, is that they don't tell anybody.
They don't tell anybody?
Generally speaking, they don't. They don't tell even, people within their own family. I can't tell you how many people I've interviewed, particularly who've been, taken on board, tell me, I don't take drugs. I have no history of mental illness in my family. I'm well educated. I haven't told anybody this. My wife doesn't even know. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what is going on here? So I'd say maybe about one in, oh, I'm being generous here, one in 10, probably closer to one in 100, honestly, call the police and or the Air Force, and in a few cases, perhaps MUFON or New Fork, the UFO reporting centers, if they can find them. But most people know. And so that's why I'm thinking, you know, according to New Fork and MUFON, they receive multiple reports daily. Hmm. We're talking, you know, 10, 20.
Every day.
And it, wow. Every day. And if that's true, and only one in 100 report their sighting, we're looking at, you know, 200, 2,000 reports a day, which means someone right now is seeing a UFO at all times. This is an ongoing, perpetual phenomenon.
So when we use the term UFO, would that mean, it could be in a lot of different things, but in general, are you using it in the context that it's other than earthly phenomena, somebody flying around in something, and these people aren't from Earth?
Yeah, I mean, to me, a UFO is an alien craft. It's not okay. The greatest term.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about, you know, unexplained lights, which, you know, there are a lot of reports of that.
There's plenty of that, sure, yeah.
Most people I've spoken with, you know, by the time they reach me, they've got a story to tell, and it's not just a little light.
If it's just alien thing, you could just build a wall, right? No, I'm just kidding. No, that's not the same kind. You know? You're talking about other than earthly aliens. Okay, if you'd like to be on the show, ask Preston a question. We have lots to talk about. This will be fun. Preston Denton, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com, OneRadioNetwork.com. I'm having such a good time with the hydrogen machine. This is Brown's gas. This is it's kind of new technology. Well, not really new. Some of the real geeky people like Mark Circus and George Wiseman and other hydrogen folks, they've been into it for 20, 30 years, learning about it and learning the magic of this gas. It is the most prolific element in the universe, hydrogen. Do you know that? That's right. And Dr. Circus, well, anyway, if you'd like to get one of these machines, this may juice you up to get one. There's something very, very much going on with this, breathing this gas and making the water. Dr. Mark Circus in Brazil has been studying hydrogen for many years, long time. We recently had him on the air and we asked, what's going on with this AquaCure machine putting hydrogen and water and gas in the body?
Well, first of all, you're fooling around with, as I say, the borderline between physical universe and light. Hydrogen is the most basic and common element in the whole universe. Mm-hmm. Every star in the universe eats it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner by the mountainfuls. Interstellar space is full of it, so it's circulating. And it's very small. Hydrogen or hydrogen gas, molecular hydrogen, is very small. And it's like vitamin C, which is about 137 times bigger. It's an antioxidant, and as it is on every sun, and with rockets going to space, use hydrogen cars, buses, and trains, it's a fuel. So it's a fuel for the mitochondria, or the energy factories of all the cells.
A little more on our educational series on hydrogen. You can get the AquaCure machine in our store with a lifetime warranty and a one-year no-questions-asked money-back guarantee if you don't even want it after 10 months. Go figure. In our store right now, promo code ONERADIO gets you 10% discount, and you'll have the option to breathe hydrogen gas and make hydrogen water. OneRadioNetwork.com. It's actually Brown's gas, also hydrogen gas. And if you want to see what's going on in the world, you can just Google or DuckDuckGo, whichever one you use, molecular hydrogen, and just look at some of the things being done with it around the world in more conventional allopathic and modern medicine settings of Mayo Clinics and stroke victims and all kinds of things that are going on. So even the more unnatural world are getting into it, but not too many people know about it. But George has got the great machine. He has double redundancy safety features on it. Most of the ones out there do not. It's a very powerful substance. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to do what it does in our body. So you have to be careful and have it properly construct a machine with safety devices that'll turn off if something goes wrong. George has got this all figured out. And a lot of them out there are a lot of less expensive ones. They do not. And so be careful. Just be careful. I took digestive enzymes for years. Not anymore.
The true enzymes. There's a big hype about enzymes out there. Most of them are selling plant enzymes. You know, you've heard about plant enzymes and all that stuff.
Sure, sure.
Okay, a true enzyme that breaks down food, it helps you digest, is created by a probiotic. That's what a true enzyme. It's a molecule. And when it comes in contact with a food, there's a chemical reaction goes on that transmutes the solid food into a liquid. They're manufactured by probiotics. And they're so tiny, these enzymes are so tiny, I haven't ever seen a picture of one. That's how small they are. They're just microscopic molecules, and they do chemical reactions. When they produce them, they do. It's an acid, or acid molecules. And when they come in contact with a food, a solid food particles, it liquefies it. This is why it's so important when you eat food to drink water, because it can't really work without water. They really can. They need to water there. They live in water. So they in the small intestinal tract, is supposed to be all liquid.
So probiotics actually produce digestive enzymes.
Right,
so
exactly.
If we got to write probies, you're saying you don't need to buy digestive enzymes.
No, not really, because all you have to do is take our multi-blend when you eat your food, a couple, two or three drops, and it'll digest food even, and usually it gets rid of all the gas and stuff. There's a different kind of reaction going on.
Pretty cool information. You can get all of Wayne's products, Living Streams, and of course, Multi-Blend, talked about here in our store, right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. And how important. Man, with each day, I can't believe that even 5 years ago, we didn't have the information we do have about the microbiome and the gut and how it's the main engine for our immune system and everything. And the lady yesterday talking about how nice, what a wonderful, perfect food milk is. We're learning more about that. I mean, real milk. But she works with people with probiotics and other things to heal the gut with different herbs. And once the gut gets healed and using a lot of probiotics and other things, and then folks can just kind of eat whatever they want as long as it's good quality and they do well with it. So this is really key stuff. These are great products, and these work like probiotics are supposed to. Also, one thing you might have fun with, Moringa, Dr. Teitelbaum, who we had on yesterday again, she was talking about in Ayurveda how Moringa is one of the most amazing, powerful trees, herbs, or whatever you want to call it, on planet Earth. It's just, and Wayne has a Moringa product. It comes in a quart bottle. And you can get yourself a quart of that and just start drinking it. Just put an ounce in every now and then. Just see what it does. A lot of good things going on with Moringa. And this is a pre-digested form in the probiotics. So you're going to really get a lot of go power rather than just buying a Moringa soft drink at the hippie food store. So Moringa, that's a cool thing you can play with. It's in our store, OneRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com.
We certainly do. Having fun talking with Preston Dennett, investigating UFOs and the paranormal since 1986. So what's your definition? I mean, how would you define paranormal?
Paranormal, in a way, I think, is kind of a misnomer. There really is no such thing. It's just a reflection of our inability to understand what's happening.
Yeah.
The laws of the universe are not being broken. Instead, we just don't quite understand the mechanism behind perhaps a ghost, a ghostly apparition. UFOs should not have been placed within the paranormal realm. They really have nothing to do with it. Out-of-body experiences, Bigfoot, all of this stuff is just phenomenon that we don't understand. So paranormal to me really just indicates a lack of understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as spiritual beings, as soul, who we are, I mean, if we just believe that this body is real and we're real and this is real, I mean, you can understand why most folks look at it as something paranormal. You know, something magic is going on here, and I don't understand it.
Right. Well, what I found is most people have experienced the paranormal at least once or twice in their lives.
Sure.
Whether it's a precognitive dream, perhaps.
Sure.
Or an out-of-body type experience, or a visitation from a spirit, mm-hmm. even within a dream.
Mm-hmm.
This sort of thing, a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, I asked everyone in my family, and most everyone has at least one type of paranormal experience, except for maybe my sister. Who's like, why has nothing ever happened to me?
She wants something to happen to her, not. Well, on the UFO thing, you had said, and other people conjecture that there's been a cover-up. Talk a bit about that. Is it just agencies of the government that don't think that we can handle the truth as they did in A Few Good Men with Jack Nicholson? Is that what that's about?
To a certain extent, there is a cover-up. It's not speculation. It's absolutely demonstrable. It's proven through the Freedom of Information Act and released confidential or formerly confidential documents from, the Air Force, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, are all actively researching this subject. There have been, official government studies like Project Blue Book or the Condon Committee or the Robertson Panel, all of which found that UFOs do not represent a threat to national security and that there's no pay dirt in it. But at the same time, there are further studies going on above these that are confidential. And we've proven this through, the Freedom of Information Act. And it's not just the U.S. government. It's governments across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this is verified by very high-level people within government and military, all the way from, presidents on down. Senators have seen UFOs, governors, representatives, you name it. Very high-level military officials, whether it's generals or captains and, pilot sightings. There are a lot of people within, the scientific community who have seen this, mm-hmm. astronomers.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere along the line, somewhere in the United States, let's talk about them, somebody made the decision to just not, let's talk about this stuff until we figure out what's going on and what we're going to do and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it kind of all started early on, probably before the 1940s. People often point to the Roswell crash in 1947,
right,
which was actively covered up. It was almost released. They did issue a press release saying, "We found a flying saucer."
Did they really?
Yeah, they absolutely did. And it caused a firestorm.
They
retracted it.
47? Whoa. Yeah,
they retracted it almost immediately and said, no, it was a weather balloon, which is ludicrous because these were intelligence officers who were on the scene looking at the stuff. They know what a weather balloon looks like.
Hmm.
There's been 100 books, I'm not even exaggerating, written on Roswell alone.
On Roswell alone, yeah. So tell folks what that is. Roswell, New Mexico, some kind of other than earthly craft evidently crashed.
Right.
Right.
Yes, this was during a lightning storm, crashed on the Mac Brazel Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, that's what we thought.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it had just sort of touched down there, went over the mountains and crashed on the other side in the desert there,
uh-huh.
and was viewed by a lot of people. They've interviewed the people who saw this on radar, who saw this in the sky,
really?
Who were called out to the crash to guard it, who picked up the wreckage, who transported the wreckage. We've followed this case really from beginning to end. And it was actively covered up, I think for a number of reasons. One is we didn't understand it. Two is it clearly represented a threat to national security. And three, ultimately, this was a technological marvel that had the potential to really change the face of our planet.
Do we know who got to the crash site first?
Well, it's kind of tricky because in some ways, Mac Brazel. He was there early on looking at this sort of field of wreckage.
Right.
But that wasn't the craft itself. That was just part of it. On the other, you know, some miles away, there was a group of archaeological students who came upon the actual craft itself.
Mm-hmm.
So they were among the first. But a lot of people saw this. There were some campers who apparently saw it as well. They stayed away from the whole fray. But the military was the one who was called to it and guarded it and clamped it down tight.
Yeah. So obviously there had to be some little space beans in there. Come on.
Apparently there were. This is what the witnesses are saying.
Really?
And multiple witnesses. Four foot tall, little, what we know as grays now, or perhaps the typical gray. Hard to say. But yeah, absolutely there were reports of beings. The Air Force knew this. They wrote their own book on Roswell and called it a Mogul balloon.
Hmm.
And said what people saw was actually crash test dummies.
Which
is all well and good. I mean, it's a great little debunking explanation, but it doesn't fit because we didn't drop those until after 1950. They made a mistake there. That does not explain the evidence.
So they probably have these little beans pickled somewhere in formaldehyde or something, studying them.
Oh, yeah, presumably. Number of people at the Roswell base saw them. Certainly the mortician, Glenn Dennis, the press release officer, Walter Hout, a number of witnesses saw this. A fireman who was called to the scene, Frank Dwyer, I think was his name.
Mm-hmm.
These are just a few of the, many hundreds of witnesses.
Yeah.
But Roswell is just the tip of the iceberg. What I found, and I found this out, writing UFOs over California, UFOs over New Mexico and, New York and various other states, is all of these states have crash retrieval accounts. It's not just Roswell. Yeah. Roswell's the most famous case, but there's Kecksburg in Pennsylvania. There was a crash. There was a crash in Paradise Valley in Arizona. There was another in New Mexico, Aztec. So there are a lot of them. And when I say a lot, I'm talking well over 100.
What are these guys doing crashing? You think if they had the technology to get here from wherever they are, I mean, it doesn't seem weird to you that they would crash?
Yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah.
So apparently they're not as infallible as we might like to believe.
Right. Yeah.
That's the main theory. Some researchers are saying, you know what? They may have gifted these to us. They may have just let us have them for whatever reason.
Oh, so they just maybe parachute out or whatever they do and just let it crash to the ground or do a suicide thing and for humanity or whatever. Who knows?
It's real hard to say. I don't like to speculate in this field because you can go off into the deep end quickly.
On the other ones on the states other than Roswell, I'm curious, were there reports and actual any evidence of the beings being found other than earthly beings?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The Roswell's the granddaddy of all these cases in that there's so many witnesses.
A
number of these other cases rely on just a few witness accounts, some more than others. But it's ironic, really, because here we have the best evidence you could possibly have, the actual craft, and we don't have access to it at all.
Mm-hmm.
The only evidence really, there's a lot of evidence in the public arena. It's not just eyewitness accounts and, supported by lie detector tests. There are dozens upon dozens of radar return cases. There are some thousands landing trace cases. There's all kinds of medical evidence cases, people who've been, burned perhaps or even healed. There are implant removal cases where people believe they were implanted while, being taken on board a craft, and they later have an object removed. So there's an enormous amount of physical evidence out there within the public arena, but the craft themselves are still being covered up and secreted at places like Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Edwards Air Force Base, Area 51, and frankly, a lot of Air Force bases have been implicated in this phenomenon.
Huh. Some people conjecture that President Kennedy was going to release a lot of this stuff. Is that true?
Yes. That's not my particular area of expertise,
right.
But I have read some books on it, and it's very compelling evidence that apparently, yeah, he knew about the UFO situation, knew there was a cover-up, had realized it had sort of gotten out of control in terms of, you know, the president didn't even have access to all this,
to all the information.
Knowledge.
Yeah.
So it was, in effect, a constitutional crisis, and he was going to blow the whistle. And the people who are in power, who are in control of this phenomena, were not about to let that happen.
Hmm. Yeah, some people conjecture that's one of the reasons why he was just one of the many why he, you know, they got rid of him. Wow. Could be. I mean, boy, you get up on that level, Preston, and the amount of power and fear and greed and whatever all bundled in together, anything's possible, right?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's what it comes down to, is power and greed.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The people who are in control of the subject have made it a policy to cover it up from day one. So they've sort of painted themselves into a corner. But now it comes down to the fact that our economy is driven largely by, you know, fossil fuels. And these craft are not using fossil fuels. And now that we have them, we have that technology. And that would absolutely change the face of our planet if it was released. It would, you know, completely cause havoc, not only among perhaps religious institutions, but among economics.
Sure, yeah.
So that's another factor for the cover-up.
Patrick Timpone with Preston Denton. Patrick Timpone and Preston. And what's your main website, Preston, your main one?
It's actually, if you just Google my name, it'll take you there. It's PrestonDennett.Weebly.com.
Yeah, Dennett. Can't even read my own handwriting. Weebly.com. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com. So after all these years, give us some of what you believe, the best of your knowledge, what's going on. So are these different races or different species that are coming over here and visiting?
Yes.
Are they different ones, huh?
Yes. In my own research, I think this is borne out by other researchers, most of what I hear are people who contact some variation of what we now know or call the grays, which is, you know, 4 feet tall, perhaps 3 to 5 feet, very large dark eyes, large heads, bald, very pale skin, gray, white, beige, and seem to be, you know, one species very much like us with incredible variation. I'm going to say at least 50% of the people I talk to see what we would call the grays.
What you call the grays. I've seen some kind of drawings and kind of almost like Close Encounters kind of.
Right. Pretty much. And in fact, that's where he got those descriptions from actual accounts.
Really? Oh, Spielberg? That's where they got him?
Yes. Much of that movie is actually very true.
Huh.
I mean, it's absolutely a fictionalized account, but
sure.
The details in it, you know, the ships that people see, some of the actual encounters, like remember when Richard Dreyfuss sees that sign shaking back and forth?
Right.
That's from the Loch Raven Dam case. That's exactly what happened there.
Oh.
A number of people have gotten sunburns on their face from this sort of stuff. Apparently, there was a government meeting with these aliens at Edwards Air Force Base and, for that matter, Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico and other places. It's absolutely based on reality, Close Encounters.
But most of the ones, would you say half or so, are these grays, like
yes.
That depicted in that movie, and the people then obviously give the same, keep giving you and others the same kind of description, all these researchers asking people all over the world?
Pretty much, but it's a little frustrating and hard to categorize because what we don't have is like exact matches where people can say, oh, you know, I saw the exact same, you know, patch on their uniform. Or, I mean, we do get a little bit of that here and there, but it's very hard to categorize. And beyond just the grays, we have what I guess you would term praying mantis type, which looks very much like the praying mantis insect, except they're 9 to 10 feet tall, 12 feet tall, very intelligent, very long stick-like limbs, very large eyes. That would be the second most common, perhaps. And beyond that would be human-looking ETs that look essentially like us, mm-hmm. though perhaps, you know, more beautiful or genetically perfect or muscular, and often described as looking very similar to each other, like twins or brothers. Those are the three main types, but there's a catch-all category. At least 25% is just anything. It could be short humanoids, it could be tall humanoids, light beings, robotic type figures. What I do find interesting is almost without exception, when someone sees what they believe to be an extraterrestrial, it is a humanoid of humanoid form, meaning, you know, eyes, mouth, head, arms, legs, bipedal. We don't get like, you know, octopuses with tentacles and weird things like you see in perhaps science fiction.
Yeah, so perhaps in this sphere of the universe that goes on forever, probably, you know, we have no idea how big the whole thing is. Probably doesn't stop, right? But anyway, in our sphere, maybe, or in our corner of the world, so to speak, maybe the humanoid form, you know, the eyes and the mouth and the nose stuff, is kind of the genre that we all whatever evolved in somehow.
It seems that way, you know, and I was kind of honestly repulsed by it because I thought, this is too Star Trek. This is very much like Star Trek, and it's bothersome. But what it comes down to is you're sort of stuck with the evidence. This is what people are seeing. And again, you know, most people who see a UFO are not alone. There are a number of multiple witness abduction cases as well, like the Allagash case in Maine. Involved four gentlemen who were taken aboard a craft together. The Betty and Barney Hill case, they were taken together. Calvin Parker and, the other guy down in Pascagoula, Mississippi, they were taken together. So Betty Andreessen, she had a lot of experiences herself, but the Greys came right into her house and her daughter saw them and her father saw them. We're not relying on a single witness here,
sure,
by any means.
So you've talked to people that they've actually had the onboard experiences together, and you've talked to more than one who had the same experience.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, I think this is the cutting edge of research.
Yeah.
You know, a sighting is very interesting because it proves, you know, that these objects are here in large numbers and that it's not a star or a meteor, or and that these are craft that can outdistance our own craft, are far superior, technologically speaking, than anything we have. But ultimately, it's the people who are having face-to-face contact or onboard experiences who have the most information about what is going on here. So that's where I focused a lot of my own research.
Wow. So What do you think these guys are doing here? I mean, what's your theory? I mean, we don't know for sure because we never really talked to them, right? Said, like, what are you doing here? But I guess there are people that have talked to them and other doing soul travel or out-of-body experiences, haven't they? I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do we know for sure? Do we know anything for sure?
For sure, that's a superlative word. No, we don't know for sure, but we do know what, you know, people have experienced and what they have been told by the ETs, and they do speak. Generally speaking, the ETs, and that's what I'm going to call them because I think that's the theory that fits best. I believe we are dealing with biological beings from other planets, and generally speaking, when someone has an onboard experience, the only conversation they hear is, don't be afraid. We're not here to hurt you. You need to come with us. You won't remember. This sort of thing. They're very coy about where they've come from. You know, a number of people have asked flat out, who are you? Where do you come from? And they'll say, oh, it's not important. Or you wouldn't understand. Or we're from a place you don't know about yet.
Mm-hmm.
Things like this. But when someone is taken on board, we do know what's going to happen. I mean, we've mapped this out to a point where, when someone comes to me and says, you know, I've had this experience, I've got a chart, you know, and I can pretty much predict at least 50 to 80% of what they're going to say, because it does follow a pattern. The most common experience that people have when taken on board is being physically examined, undressed, and having, you know, hair samples taken, skin samples, saliva samples, reproductive material, this sort of thing. That's very common. Most people who have had an onboard experience will describe that. They'll describe the inside of the UFO very similarly, usually as being pretty small, a rounded room, clean, with pastel colors, you know, light blue, white, tan. Universally, they will describe indirect lighting. Nobody has ever seen a light bulb on board a UFO. It's just sort of, and I don't want to say nobody, but you know what I mean.
Most people
describe indirect lighting. They can't see where this light is coming from. It's as if the walls themselves glow.
But are these people taken against their will? I mean, they literally grabbed and, I mean, most folks would be so freaked they wouldn't go, would they?
Probably not. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
By and large, yeah. I mean, this is a real problem. They are. They're kidnapped. They're taken while driving. They're taken out of their bedrooms.
Uh-huh.
Literally taken, you know, it doesn't matter where you live. I've got cases of people taken from hotels or condominium complexes or generally very crowded suburbs. There'll be a wave of sightings, and usually somewhere in there that someone is being abducted. One person's sighting is another person's onboard experience, is what I found.
And I wonder why they're getting examined. Do they have to sedate them in some way? I mean, people would be, I don't know, I think most folks would just be having heart attacks or freaking out so much, but I don't know.
Yeah, most people do, if they remember it, are pretty traumatized by it. They're generally speaking in a state of temporary paralysis that's imposed upon them by the ETs, and also sort of a mental calming effect. A number of people have told me, like, I should have been screaming my head off. I should have been terrified, but I wasn't. Mm. I was just calm, and it wasn't until afterwards. But ultimately, I'm hopeful about what's going on here, because while people are being physically examined, they're not being, like, tortured. I don't get accounts of sadism or, you know, ETs delighting in hurting people or anything like that.
You've not got no reports like that? Nothing at all?
Very few. Statistically insignificant. Mm-hmm. There are negative experiences. People do, you know, report sort of surgical operations occasionally that we don't quite understand what's going on. But when ETs do talk to people, and it does happen, people have conversations, and they generally fall into three main categories, and ETs giving messages of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And by far the most common thing, and I hear this quite a bit, and this is definitely borne out by other researchers, people are given warnings about environmentalism in some capacity, usually warnings against nuclear proliferation, warning against our warlike ways and our aggression and our hatred for each other and our prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
Warnings about pollution, that comes up quite a bit. Overpopulation, all of these sort of things, which to me is very hopeful and shows that, you know, they're concerned certainly about our planet. They seem to be very obsessed with us and our planet, taking, you know, not only abducting humans, but abducting all manners of animals and plants. So they're collectors to a certain extent.
I've known this doctor for about, 35 years or so, and he's like my brother, and he's just a very wise man and very quite evolved spiritually. But he's been kind of working with other than ETs for maybe 10 years or so, and it's all telepathically. And they'll actually have him suggest that he go down to places like Chile, and he's been down there and where they have bases and stuff. And it's pretty much, what he's been able to tell me, it's pretty much there. that they're just communicating with him, offering their support if they can help him doing anything that he wants to do. And he's got a lot of ideas of things that he wants to do in the health arena and things like that. And they're helping him figure this stuff out. It's pretty,
right. Yeah.
Pretty cool. I mean, and he communicates with him telepathically.
That's pretty much how
it works,
people,
right?
Communicate. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost always telepathy when someone's taken on board. Certainly, the ETs communicate telepathically. And if you speak Spanish, they'll communicate with you, right. You know, in Spanish or French.
Of course, Preston, you and I do too, right? We're all telepathically communicating all the time. We're just not conscious of it, right?
That's what language is really based on.
Sure.
And telepathy has been proven in a laboratory setting.
Oh, yeah.
It's a real phenomena. And no, if you ask around and you search your own past and you pay attention, you will pick up on this.
No doubt.
Most people have had, you know, telepathic instances in their life where they know who's going to call, or they, you know, think something just before someone else says it.
You could sit there and talk, think about someone, imagine that you're talking to them, right? In your imagination, just sit there, close your eyes, and you do that a lot for a couple of days, and I guarantee you, you're going to be talking to that person. I mean, it's pretty much, right? It's just, there's no accidents there. You know, they're going to call you or something. You're going to, you know, it's just, that's the way it works. I mean, that's how we, I think that's how we run into people and how we, get into different tribes and meet people that we like. I mean, that's how that works, I think.
Yeah. You know, I've experienced telepathy a number of times throughout the years. Most recently, I was training someone to, you know, cover my desk at work. I do bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult job with a lot of, you know, moving parts. And we were having trouble finding someone who could do it. Finally found this lady. And I'm training her, and we started picking up on each other's thoughts. And she'd be like, whoa, Twilight Zone, woo, woo, woo.
Oh, really? That's
and then
great.
It would happen to me, and I'd be like, wow. Because I just really resonated with her.
Yeah, all right, right. Yeah.
And I think that's what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly that's how ETs communicate. People have heard them speak verbally or audibly, but generally, no. All the messages are given telepathically. And they're very interested in healing, by the way.
Yes.
That's another one of their messages given to people is all about spirituality in some aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, you know, out-of-body experiences. It could be past lives. It could be channeling. But generally, what I've found is people who are having extensive experiences come away from them spiritually transformed and very interested in environmentalism, in human rights, in animal rights, in Reiki, in hands-on healing, in channeling.
All kinds of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, all but, these alternative things.
And one thing my friend did tell me, he said, you shouldn't assume that just because people are from another planet, or, you know, that they are necessarily more evolved than you or I are, because he said it's not the case. They're all on a spiritual search, just like we are.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think
that makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. I think that we are looking at beings that are pretty much more technologically.
Sure.
You know, surpassing us in most cases, though perhaps not by a huge amount, because we're catching up. I mean, we've got some of these craft and we're beginning to understand them and how they work, and we're flying them around apparently. But I think it would be a huge mistake to say that these are all our friends. It's a wide, wide universe out there.
You think? Yeah.
But what I have found is ET behavior, as we know it, as we've observed it, falls under the same exact umbrella as human behavior, except I would say it's probably a little more positive, because we don't see, like, you know, these mass murderers and it's just awful human behavior like sadism and stuff that just doesn't appear a lot.
Of course, we've not been to their planets and we have perfect recall, even though we maybe have visited our planet, you know, in our soul body or something. But so we don't really know what's going on in their planets, do we? I mean,
no.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating. We know nothing really about their whole society. We know a little bit. There was one case in Texas. This is from researcher Constance Clear. She was interviewing this gentleman who's had pretty horrific experiences. They weren't pleasant. He was finding himself on board a UFO, being physically examined and operated on and so on. They did heal him of kidney stones, which was nice, but some of these were painful operations. And at one point, he was talking to one of the ETs, and turned out to be a female, and she said that she was the commander of the craft and that she was very proud of it because she was like the highest ranking female on her ship. And when I heard that, I thought to myself, okay, are you telling me the Greys deal with sexual discrimination then? And that most, you know, commanders are men. So there was a tiny little glimpse into, you know, their society mirroring ours in some ways.
Here's an email for you, Preston. I just tuned in when wondered what your guest thinks about crop circles. Does he think that they are communication from aliens? From Kate in Louisville. Thanks, Kate. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole crop circle phenomena. Wow.
It's pretty trippy, isn't it? I mean, these things are something. I mean, where do they come from?
It's a baffling mystery that people have tried to sort of link to UFOs and not super successfully because we don't see UFOs hovering over them on a regular basis. We have seen like little balls of light. There's been some recordings showing this, but there's so few. We don't know how they're being made. We don't know who's doing it. They are absolutely valid. It's not being done by people. There are some, you know, that you can go out there with a piece of plywood and a rope and create a pretty convincing crop circle. But if you study these things, we have, you know, Dr. Levengood studied these scientifically and proved that it's not being done by stepping down on them. It's being done by some energetic force, which is causing the nodes in these plants to burst and lay down. So you can look at it from under a microscope and tell when a crop circle is valid or not. And boy, they are beautiful and do contain all kinds of mathematical symbols and are very symbolic. So it's absolutely a real phenomenon that I do think is designed to sort of wake people up or cause, you know, some talking and some discussion.
Sure.
And sort of, I don't know if aliens are doing it or not. I suspect probably we just don't know.